Let's call the meeting of the Energy Finance and Policy Division to order. Members, we have fairly ambitious agenda today. So we told Representative Lilly, who promises us to be brief, that we would put him up to the top of the agenda. Of his threat to have a long-winded introductory speech, but before we act on Representative Lilly's bill, the first order of business would be the approval of the minutes from March 9th. I would entertain a motion to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Jackson moves approval of the minutes from March 9th. Are there any additions or corrections?
Oh, yeah.
Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and my apologies about the elevator situation in which I said I had a 40-minute speech prepared.
Representative Lilly, before we get to your explanation of the bill, the chair will move that House File 951 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. So, to your bill then, Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 959 is a pretty straightforward bill. It's I have an expert here who's really going to tell you what exactly it is, but essentially, in a quick brief, it allows the municipal utilities around the state to kind of join together and to create economies of scale in which they're able to purchase and to pool their efforts to buy bigger power plants or, you know, to do those sort of things. And that's in kind of looking at the future of some of the goals that we've set as a state as far as our trying to be green and those efforts. And so this should help in those areas and others. But with me, I have Mr. Lee Rowdy from the Minnesota Municipal Power Agency, and I hope he can add some deep wisdom to this filter.
Mr. Rowdy, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for the sake of clarity, because I think some members may recall me as the Deputy Commissioner of the PCA, where I was up until last year, I'm not representing the PCA. I'm here on behalf of NMPA, so just wanted to make sure that was clear. Just very simply, the
you do need to identify yourself for the record.
Yes, Leo Rodis, last name is spelled R-A-U-D as in David, Y, S as in Sam. Quite simply, the bill allows municipal power agencies, along with other agencies or municipalities, to form another agency to join together as a separate agency. And the reason that we're interested in this is that we're in the process of developing three very big wind developments in order to meet the renewable energy standard, and we're moving forward on those three projects. One is 44 megawatts, the other one is 44 megawatts, and the third project is 200 megawatts, all in the southern part of the state. And once those projects get very, very big, there are economies of scale that can be achieved so that we can actually deliver the power more cheaply. However, financing that becomes very, very challenging under the current law. And what we believe is that if agencies, along with other agencies or municipalities, can form agencies specifically to work on things like renewable energy projects, we would be able to effectively finance the bigger projects, which would be very, very challenging given the way the law is currently constructed. So it's a fairly simple change in our view, and it simply just broadens the applicability.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just want to mention that many of the cities, including my own, North St. Paul, and we really we want to join together with Representative Beard City, Shakopee, and not with the horse track. We want to join together with electric efforts, for example. Sorry.
Are there questions for members on House File 951? Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lilly or testifier, Mr. Rowdy?
Rudy.
I'm looking here just quickly over the bill, and I know I'm a co-author on the bill. Just to be clear for the committee, is this like enabling to do a joint powers agreement to engage in these things, or actually merge the munis so you've got a whole new board? And or practically, how do you see this working out? And Mr. Chair, I may have a follow-up depending on the answer.
Sure, Mr. Chair, Representative, it's not to actually create mergers of munis. It's just to give them another opportunity to form a different organization to do certain things.
Okay.
So it doesn't change the nature of the relationship between the munis and their customers.
Mr. Chair, that's very clarifying, because I'm thinking about our city and the city council appointing the members of the municipal board and how that relates. And, of course, our city taps from once in a while. I'm sure they all do for revenue, and that would differ from muni to muni. So hearing that it's actually a separate organization, I think probably makes this a pretty workable deal. Thank you.
Sure. One question in that regard is, you just said a moment ago that this would enable them to do certain things. Are there things other than what we're contemplating here coming together for a specific wind project that it would enable them to do?
Mr. Chair, I guess I couldn't speculate beyond what we're currently planning on doing. It simply just creates another opportunity for agencies and municipalities to form agencies, much like they can right now. But right now, it's just municipalities being able to do that, not agencies. So I think, you know, it's just basically the kinds of things that an agency can do today, this new type of an agency was able to do as well. The only difference is that the formation of the membership would be slightly different.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Reyes, can't the municipal do it right now without legislation? Can't they form their own agency like this without having to have formal language put into law?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the only other thing that we've looked at that might have offered the opportunity to do this is to form some sort of a joint powers agreement. The difficulty there is that there are limitations in financing in terms of assigning liability to the participants of the joint powers agreement. So for an agency to be able to do this and to form another agency with other municipalities or agencies, this is really the only way that we can see doing it.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Reyes, how will this save the ratepayers money?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't think it would have any change whatsoever in that regard.
It's not going to help them whatsoever?
Mr. Reyes.
Mr. Chair, Representative, my understanding is that it would be neutral in that regard. I don't see how it would change it one way or the other. From our perspective, this is just another way to organize municipalities and agencies to be able to do larger projects that are difficult to do. The example of one of the projects is the 200 megawatt project that we're developing west of Albert Lea. It's going to cost on the order of $540 million to be able to fund that project, and that's simply too big for an agency like ours to do that ourselves.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, I with this bill, I kind of envision it being able to buy perhaps, you know, like he says, into a more efficient plant, and it, you might see changes in possibly in rates and, you know, some efficiencies. And certainly it's going to be moving a long way towards our effort to, you know, greener projects and those regards as well. So I know that's a rather vague answer, but it's never certain with rates. And then just a clarifying point, too, I'm not aware of any opposition. I've had no visitors, as we often do in our offices, so maybe they're here. I don't know, but I have not seen or heard of any, so it's kind of nice.
Are there further questions for the witness or Representative Lilly? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing no one and no further questions, the chair will renew his motion that House File 951 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All those in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you.
Representative Saylor. Representative Saylor, we're encouraged to note that this bill does not deal with information technology.
Just think.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is a different committee.
Representative Saylor, we could begin with a motion.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, I move that House File 1259 be recommended to pass and be returned to the Committee on Finance with a recommendation to re-refer it to Capital Investment Finance.
Very good, and if you are ready, please proceed.
All right, I will start with my brief comments, Mr. Chair and members. I'll just explain, I do have two bills that the wording is the same, which is why we're having the testimony on both of them. The only thing that is different about the bill before you now and the one we'll come after is simply the funding source. So that's why they're different. And this bill, basically as in an effort to try and assist our schools with cutting their heating costs and finding ways of more efficiently heating their buildings. I have prepared House File 1250. Basically, it's $5 million from bond funds to go to installing solar energy projects to generate energy for the public K-12 schools, including swimming pools, because swimming pools is, as I understand it, one of the highest expenses that schools incur. And I believe that regardless of what happens with school districts and the economy in the future, it's unlikely that they're going to be closing down their swimming pools, and they have to keep them year-round. So that is the reason that I included swimming pools with funding for the public K-12 schools. And we also have to be sure that the physical condition of the school is sufficient to support the solar energy project, that enrollment projections for the schools indicate no possibility of the school closing within 10 years, and that the projected cumulative energy costs of the grant or exceed the grant amount and the corresponding debt service within 15 years for qualifying solar thermal projects and 20 years for photovoltaic. And I probably don't have to explain that too much in this committee, but I will just say that solar thermal is air and water heating, and PV or photovoltaic is, of course, the energy being converted into electricity. It was interesting that even though I'd had this bill prepared long since, just 2 days ago I received word from my school district, Park Rapids, saying that they're just in desperate need of help with boilers. They've got 39-year-old boilers, and they need to do something different with their heating system. And I said, well, we're looking at things here in the legislature for that. But schools are typically spending, you know, like $375,000, almost $376,000 a year for a medium-sized school district. Bemidji School spent $425,000 2 years ago on just their heat. So we have a real need to address this with our schools to try to figure out how to save money for them. I do have two testifiers with me today, and they are certainly very well versed, and I would like to make sure that they have time to address you. And so they are Randy Hagen and Craig Carr, and I will turn this over to them at this point. Randy?
Mr. Chairman, Randy Hagan, owner of Solar, co-owner of Solar Skies Manufacturing.
And my name is Craig Tarr. I'm a licensed CE in the state of Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, as owner of Solar Skies, I don't mean to be too self-serving here, but I think it is important to let you know that this is technology, two of the three types we're mentioning here today, technology that is manufactured in Minnesota. In fact, the collectors that we make in the town of Starbuck, West Central Minnesota. I'll spare the details of our company, but we sell product throughout the United States. The product we sell and the product we would propose going on schools is what's called a solar thermal panel. It is approved by the SRCC, the Solar Rating Certification Corporation, and we manufacture everything that is needed for the installation of these systems on schools. Basically, the collectors are quite simple. They're a box, aluminum box with glazing on top, and they've got a copper manifold inside, which heats water. Minnesota is a great solar resource. It works as the solar is good here as it is in Houston, Texas, and the Florida Panhandle. Another common question we get is how does it stand up to Minnesota extreme conditions? Snow is one of those. These are the panels in the morning. This is what happens in the afternoon, provided there's enough radiation there to be of use. So it's not going to be a maintenance issue for the school in terms of the snow removal aspect of it. Another question we commonly get is the strength of these systems. We've got two pretty large individuals there, wind and hail. I think that slide speaks for itself. The solar industry, there's solar thermal, which is what we manufacture, and solar electric. Solar electric gets all the attention. That's why we have to try a little harder to educate people as to what solar thermal is. There's more incentives, more awareness of solar electric, and not as much for the solar thermal. There's a few different types of solar thermal that could be considered under this is appropriate equipment under this bill. The collectors, such as the ones we make, the hot water collectors, also hot air collectors, which is important to note, are also manufactured in northern Minnesota by a company called REAL. They're a nonprofit, the Rural Renewable Energy Alliance. And there's another system for that could be used on schools, the transpired air systems or the solar wall, it might be referred to. Not to put down solar electric, but again to stress the point of solar PV and solar thermal. Solar thermal is very efficient when considered against solar electric in the 50 to 75% efficiency range. So it's a good first choice for buildings when they're looking to add renewables. Different ways solar thermal can be used, certainly residentially, for domestic hot water and also for commercial use. The systems are quite simple themselves in addition to the panels, solar tank, differential controller, and a pump. Here's a look at how the solar collector and system make hot water. Sun is heating up the panels, goes through a primary tank with the heat exchanger in it, the zigzag coils that you see there, and then the fluid returns via being pushed by a pump back up to the panel to get heated again. And you've got a primary tank of solar hot water, and that fires whatever's downstream of it, typically a domestic hot water heater. I touched briefly on the residential applications, and we'll look at some commercial applications. This is the world's largest laundry, so they say, in Chicago, utilizing solar, and some looks at solar commercial solar projects, Wigwam Mills, sock manufacturer, Kalahari Resort, an assisted living facility, and a penthouse building on the top of a commercial. This is the Kalahari Water Park, and I want to show large commercial systems, and this is what on schools. Some statistics about the systems. This is producing hot water for their laundry. They do 24-hour-a-day laundry at the Kalahari, preventing 70 tons of CO2, which is also a consideration for schools, not only reducing energy costs, but lowering emissions as well. Why should solar be used on school schools. It's technology that's here today. It functions now, and it's not far off in the future. It's not grid dependent. It can be right on site. Matches perfectly with the peak needs, and it frees up our other natural resources that are in finite supply. And we hear a lot about shovel ready. These projects are ready to go. The technology is here. The infrastructure is here. We've done our part educating architects and engineers in our state. They've certainly picked up and are running with that. And again, these projects put people to work right away, save money for the schools, and something built here in the state. Professor Jane Davidson from the University of Minnesota, she says that 39 energy consumption in buildings represents 39% of U.S. energy consumption, and that's a pretty significant fact. I was told Marshall Middle School, that has a swimming pool, the LP there is roughly, the bill is roughly a third of their total bill, or I'm sorry, the natural gas for the whole school. Again, that's pretty significant if we can knock out some of those. I mentioned the incentives here residentially and commercially. There's nothing available for schools and swimming pools. That's why this bill is so crucial. Schools and pools have the advantage of utilizing these systems and doing a lot of good. And the no current incentives that I mentioned, and a list here of where you can apply the technology in schools, and I'm going to Craig will address that a little more as we go. And for a bit of levity here, it is certainly a bipartisan issue. We've been visited by both our U.S. senators last year. We've been visited also by various state representatives and senators over our three-year existence. And concluding my part of the presentation here, this is the Wellstone Apartments, and quite a beautiful backdrop there, wonderful building utilizing solar thermal. And Craig Carr of Energy Concepts is the person and company responsible for designing and installing this project. Mr. Chair, any questions?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hagan, it says in your brochure that it provides 50 to 75% of your home hot water needs. If it's only 50%, what means do you use for the other 50%?
Mr. Hagan, Representative Anderson, as I showed in that depicted in that graphic of the solar collector in the primary tank, your secondary tank further downstream from the solar tank, if the water is only 50% the level that you want your heat at, your existing infrastructure would top off the difference. It would sense that the water is not quite up to speed and just work as hard as it has to.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Hagan, you can say then with the secondary tank you did 100%?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, certainly you'll never be without hot water. Your secondary tank or your boiler, whatever is downstream of the solar system, will sense the incoming water temperature and make up that difference. And if it's coming in at no benefit from the solar, then your secondary system does 100% of the load.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Anderson,
what savings do you show by using the solar to the homeowner?
Mr. Hagan.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Anderson, we save between 50 and 75% of your annual domestic hot water bill. That's what we size our system for. We don't want to gear up for 100%. You might have more companies and stay longer than is desired or more cloudy days. We try and size them to a reasonable approximation of your load.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Hagan, can you show that in a chart form rather than, you say it on your brochure, but can you show me some valid testing that's been done between the different forms of other heat sources? I mean, in a visible piece of paper that I can read from a chart that shows using propane or using natural gas, that this will do that? I don't see that here.
Mr. Hagan.
Representative Vanderson. Certainly, we have that information in the state of Minnesota. Department of Commerce has also been logging from their first example for the residential program that was created last year. It's currently non-funded, but they have data, we have data, and I'll submit that to Representative and Rita Taylor, and we can get that to the committee.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
There are further questions at this time before we go to Mr. Tarr.
Yes,
Representative Western.
Mr. Chair, just wanted the committee to know and appreciate Mr. Hagan coming. He's got a storefront in Alec, at least he had one. I'm not sure if they still have that, Mr. Hagan, or not, but lives in Representative Anderson's district, and I had the opportunity of visiting with Mr. Hagan a couple of years ago. Happened to be during the election year, if I recall, and was in an open house right next door to his business, and interested to see that business pop up in the Alexandria area, and stopped in to visit with him, and so glad to see us moving forward with stuff like this.
Representative Western, we trust it was warm in there.
It was, Mr. Chair.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just I guess a technical question. When you mount these collectors, is there an optimum angle, or are they how do they track the sun so that they're their optimum performance?
Again. Mr. Chairman and Representative, we for domestic hot water that's used year round, summer and winter, we like to put them at 45 degrees. That approximates our latitude around here. And if you're going just for space heating, you need to be about 60 degrees to catch the lower angle of the winter sun.
Okay, thanks.
Seeing no further questions at this time, Mr. Tarr, would you like to proceed with your testimony?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representatives, for the honor to present here in front of you today. Who I am is I'm a licensed engineer in 15 different states. I personally am responsible for well over $300 million of mechanical design and construction engineer of record on many schools, many pools. And so I'm representing a little different aspect here that Mr. Hagan is a manufacturer. I'm coming from the top down as an engineer representing the architecture and engineering community that as a person who's designed boiler plants for the state of Minnesota and many schools, I can tell you from the engineering standpoint that solar hot water is very, very effective. It works very well. The question that was asked by Representative Anderson, a solar system is never designed to replace the base building heating system. I like to refer to it as a preheater. On some days, if we haven't had sun for or a week without sun, you still need the base building system to operate at full potential. There's going to be in-between days where the solar system will operate, say, at 50%. Maybe instead of heating the water from the pool up from 80 to 100 degrees, like the boiler would, it'll heat it from 80 to 90 degrees, and then the boiler's only got to heat from 90 to 100 degrees. Conversely, there's going to be days in April, in May, in October, when the sun is staring at that 45-degree collector, that no fossil fuel will be required, that the solar system will handle the needs of the system 100%. So what Mr. Hagan was referring to is that over the course of a year, the optimum sizing of a solar thermal system is between 50 and 70%. If you go more than that, it overheats. So that's a little bit about the technology of it. More often than not, we have an issue with too much heat. How do we deal with it? Because we can't turn the sun off. So if the sun is shining, it's generating heat. A proper design, you have to be able to dissipate that heat. For example, a pool would have 10,000 or more gallons of water. The temperature of that pool would raise a degree or two during the daytime. When the sun goes down, that pool will float back down a little bit until it gets to the point that the fossil fuel boiler has to come back on. If that describes a little bit about how they work. Mr. Hagan, just point out briefly the difference between solar electricity and solar thermal from an efficiency standpoint. I presented in a little different fashion that in the state of Minnesota, where carbon considerations are occurring, carbon cap trade, however that plays out, if you run the mathematics, if I spend $1 on solar thermal, and this is an important point for the Energy Committee, if I spend $1 on solar thermal and compare it to $1 of solar electricity, a dollar in solar thermal will mitigate 3 to 4 times more carbon reduction than solar electricity.
So again, I'm not dispelling solar electricity because there's a proper application for that, but solar thermal has been overlooked in the fray. And when you add carbon reduction to the mix, not just payback, take the payback. I'm not saying solar thermal is three times more of a payback. I'm saying it generates three times more units of energy, which results in carbon reduction to the effect of three times. So if you factor that in as a state that you're trying to achieve some carbon reductions, that definitely sweetens the mix for why solar thermal should be included. And then in the long-term energy supply, my personal opinion is that we are going to have natural gas issues long before electricity. Xcel is going to continue to plug our pipelines, our power lines with wind-generated electricity. We're going to start seeing concentrating solar plants come on. Long story short, I think renewable electricity is going to be here much longer and more viable into the future than natural gas. There's not going to be enough methane gas digesters to pump up our 60-pound natural gas lines crisscrossing the state. So to the extent that we can put in solar thermal systems and reduce our natural gas consumption, that is important to the long-term energy supplies of Minnesota. Then I'd like to close with a specific example. As an engineer, I have now transitioned my business into renewables. So I'm bringing professional engineering into the renewable energy industry, and I am not only an engineer, but I'm also a contractor right now. And we just completed a large solar hot water project, a pool project in Osceola in Wisconsin. It's a 32 collector system. It works impeccably. That school, if the sun is shining, that school does not need any fossil fuels while the sun is out during the daytime at all. In the shoulder months, in the spring and the fall, oftentimes the fossil fuel portion of that pool does not kick in until midnight. So it's been a significant reduction in the amount of energy that their pool has used. And that in Wisconsin, we actually have a program called Full Energy, which offers rebates to nonprofits and schools. That project would not have been possible had it not been for a 35% rebate on that project. So it is important to offer grants or rebates for this bill for the applications of solar hot water. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be open to any questions and representatives.
Thank you, Mr. Carr. I do have a question for either you or Mr. Hagan, and that is, what would typically be the total cost of a school installation?
That's a very good question. I can give you direct examples that for the Osceola school, there was three pools. There was a spa, there was a wading pool for the community, a mushroom kind of pool, and there was a competition pool, and that system for that school was about $160,000. And it received a $43,000 rebate from the state.
And perhaps this is a question for you, Representative Saylor. The language of either of the bills, the $5 million is appropriated for grants to pay the cost of installing solar energy projects. That would seem to imply that it would pay the entire cost. Is that the intention?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to be able to have this fund 20 to 30 schools. So I didn't put a cap per school on this because there is so much variability within each system, you know, that it would be hard to tell, you know, how much would be enough to do a significant amount of each particular building. But it is estimated that this figure would indeed pay for the grant for 20 to 30 schools.
And Representative Saylor, are we talking about the entire cost?
Yes.
I'm somewhat confused by the language on line 18 in which it says, it refers to the corresponding debt service. If we're having a grant that pays the entire cost, what is the corresponding debt service? I don't understand that.
As I understand it, that would be the debt service, Mr. Chair, to the state for bonding money, not to the schools, if I'm understanding that correctly.
Well, Representative Saylor, in the other version of the bill, House File 1260, which refers to federal stimulus money, the same language exists on line 17.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had used some rather standard language from previous bills in the past, and that was part of that language which probably shouldn't have been in this case. But what we were wanting to do is justify or have the schools and anyone or public buildings in the other bill that apply for this, that they are actually having economically advantageous projects. And so, again, I was using language from previous bills that maybe could be altered a little bit in this case.
Well, Representative Saylor, just to make sure that I'm clear on
yes.
this, then, is it your intention that there be any financial participation on the part of the school district, or are we talking about grants that cover the entire cost of the project?
Mr.
With
Chair.
The exception, I guess, if it's a bonding project, the interest on the bond.
Mr. Chair, it was the intent to cover the entire cost of the project.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions for Representative Saylor or her testifier? Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, just a comment to the last testifier, Mr. Tarr. You commented on your concerns for gas. There are a couple of us in legislature that share your concerns. And particularly, you referred to wind power, and the concern I have is that, in fact, several of us, that for the more wind we build, the more gas peaking plants we're ending up building. In the short term, they're expensive. In the long term, some of us question the wisdom of doing that. But just know that your concerns are heard here, and some of us are paying attention to that. My questions, though, are for clarifying questions for Representative Saylor, Mr. Chairman. As I'm looking at two bills here, first, refresh my memory which one we're working from at the moment and where we're sending it next.
Representative Beard, the one that's before us is House File 1259.
59?
And I believe both of these bills actually are being heard
well, okay, and that's
almost as we speak in the Education Finance Committee. Representative Saylor is hoping to conclude their business here and get
yes.
to that committee in time to have these bills heard yet this afternoon.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll be succinct with my questions then and let her move along here, because one of the concerns I had when I first saw the photovoltaic component was that, and some of you may remember, I've had some concerns in the past about getting school districts into the electric energy business, especially the generation business, and the attendant risk with that. It appears that that's not the case with what we're trying to do here, however. Am I correct? It appears that what we're trying to do here is supplemental power to offset a school district's power purchases right now.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bruce.
Representative Saylor.
That is correct. There are some solar thermal panel installations. I was not able to have that testifier with us today, but
yes.
they have some that use solar ducts and a PV in conjunction with each other. But I wasn't able to have that testifier here. But that is why I left the photovoltaic language in this bill, simply to leave room for some of the technologies that require both. It was not the intention to put schools into the photovoltaic business at all, but rather to supplement their heat.
Mr. Chair, follow-up question is, we've just been hearing in a couple committees now, Representative Kalin's bill, I think it's 680, if I'm not mistaken, which is a conduit bill for stimulus money to help us with energy conservation, energy improvements, particularly the alternative energies and so on. Could any of this fit into that bill already? And I guess while I'm talking about it, I'm looking at the 1259, the bonding portion of the bill, and I just saw a proposed bonding list from the Senate bonding chairman. It's up to $357 million already. I'm thinking I like the idea of the passive solar or the thermal solar experimental projects on some basis, but bonding for them when we've got all kinds of other really cool stuff already in that bill, which is getting out there. Is there a way that this can fit in Representative Kalin's bill and we can shepherd that kind of money to partially fund these projects?
Mr. Chair, Representative
Saylor.
Actually, I've had numerous conversations with both the bonding chairman, Representative Hausman, and also Senator Anderson with regard to how we can fund some of these things as we move ahead. It was not my intention to have both go through, but rather if there was not funding for the stimulus money, that we could somehow make this project available, or these projects available to schools. And that is why I had bills with two different funding sources, but it was not my intention to have, you know, $10 million, although I would certainly take it, but that was not the intent at all, but rather to assure that we will be able to assist our schools with installation of solar thermal.
Just a concluding comment, Mr. Chair.
If
it makes any difference to you, Representative Taylor, as you're putting these together, thinking of my grandkids and your grandkids are going to be paying this stimulus thing back, make it a partial, my humble request to you, partial funding from the stimulus money, and make sure the school districts have some skin in the game. And if you kind of focus on thermal, that seems to be the most effective use of the money vis-a-vis PV stuff. And kind of move it that way, I think I could be a little more comfortable with it if I can share that with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative.
Got a question, Governor?
I just wondered what the payback was. Anybody know that?
Well, in typically the payback by itself is, Mr. Chairman and Representative Fung, the payback is often 20 years or more without some type of incentive. And so, for example, Osceola Schools, they did get a 30% buy-down. So in Wisconsin, it is a partial percentage. It works out to be about 30%, and that 30% does get it into the 12 to 15-year payback range. But unto itself, 20-plus.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Gunther, again, one of the testifiers that was not able to be here today that has been installing these worldwide, I spent quite a bit of time looking at their website. At any rate, with the solar wall, and also that is a brand name, and it's also what it is in many cases, is a solar wall that attaches on the outside, and the St. Anthony School District actually has this currently. But one of the companies that the solar wall, again, that's their brand name company, when they install the solar walls in conjunction with the photovoltaic, the typical payback on a solar wall system built into something new is 0 to 3 years in new construction and 4 to 7 in retrofit applications. And they have these installed all around the world. Again, I didn't want to make copies of all of these things here, but it is a slightly different concept. I mean, the concept is the same, but it's slightly different technology. And one of the things also with the photovoltaic going along with that is that there are significant savings that are seen by the fact that the racking system can be doubled up, and also the solar thermal helps actually by drawing away the heat from the photovoltaic panels. It is supplying solar thermal heat to the building and at the same time cooling the panels. And this particular technology has been installed at the Concordia College, not here in Ontario. And so it is currently up and running at this point. But and they say it's 30 years maintenance-free, and it has a different payback than some of the other technologies. But there's a lot of difference within these technologies, and that's why I left things sort of general, because we wanted to be able to accommodate, you know, as many different ones as possible. But there's something new coming on all the time. And I guess one other thing I would just like to say, just in case this is the last, is that another business, McKinstry, which works out of Minnesota here, 1 year ago had 4 people on staff. Now they have 14, and they're planning to add another 14 people to their staff. This is engineers, just to deal with the renewable energy aspects. They don't do just solar thermal, but that is one of the things they deal with in large part, and they're the ones that did the St. Anthony School. So I just wanted to try and add a few extra things. Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Tarr, you made a statement that said that these programs would not be feasible or even available if there were not rebates, credits, or incentives. Who pays or who makes up the difference or pays for the rebates, credits, and incentives?
Mr. Tarr. Mr. Chairman, are you referring to the rebates I was talking about, for example, in, that I mentioned for Osceola School District?
Representative Anderson.
Well,
in reference to that particular project in Wisconsin, there is actually a certain amount that's taken out of each bill that funds the focused energy program, each utility, each customer's bill, and that's where that particular fund comes from. I think in the case right here, I'm not privy to where Representative Saylor's, you know, the workings of the whole fund, but the rebates are coming from the bill as it's proposed. If that answers your question or not.
Not really. Representative Taylor?
Representative Anderson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson.
Do you know who makes up the difference for the incentives and rebates and credits for this bill?
Representative Taylor?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, again, that it depends on, you know, what funding sources actually are put together as part of this whole project. And each school is going to be somewhat different as to what other funding sources that they have. If we keep it solely within the purview of this grant, if that's funding the whole thing, then obviously there's not, you know, another source to go with that. But if we end up with a situation where there's a shared cost, that may come from the school district itself or other sources. But right now there isn't a source for schools, and that's why this bill is so important, because we really need to provide that assistance. And as I said, again, regarding the testifier that was not able to be here, with the payback cost inching down, in fact, it looks like it's more than inching down in this case, going so much lower with new technology that is actually on board right now and available. I think that certainly becomes less and less of a consideration.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Anderson?
Representative Saylor, Mr. Tarr testified that we have to have a base load of something to have there constantly 24/7, and now you're going to add this on top of that to have it to supposedly reduce the amount of base load needed for that. And it's 20-year payback, or is it going to be longer than that, or are there statistics that have been proven or shown that the... Is there a return on investment that we can see?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, again, there is so much discrepancy within each of these systems that it's, you know, hard to say which payback. As I mentioned, one of them has a 3 to 5 year payback, and some of the testifiers using different technology have a different payback, and that is changing, you know, constantly. It's hard to say that any one particular scenario for figuring out the costs are something that you could look at and point a finger to exactly today. We want to open this up and make sure that the opportunity exists to be saving the money for the schools, and where possible, it's also extending jobs in Minnesota.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Saylor, I'd just like to see some data.
Mr. Chair, we will provide data.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for not being here earlier. Constituents wouldn't let me get out of my office. But I'm trying to figure out these two bills. Basically, moving together. And Mr. Chairman, is the $5 million in federal stimulus funds thought of as a matching fund for the bonding portion of this? Is typically, is my understanding, and I know we're not the Capital Investment Committee, but my understanding with bonding projects are that they should have, if not a statewide significance, at least a regional significance, and they ought to have, they're supposed to have some sort of matching funds. And I'm trying to sort this in my mind here. We've got basically $10 million here between the two, and I'm trying to understand if the federal $5 million from the federal...
These are not related, except that they're for the same purpose.
Okay.
It's an either-or, not a... Just, well, and the other. I think Representative Saylor is just trying to cover all the bases here. We're not entirely sure whether federal stimulus funds would be available for this purpose. I think that would be her preference if it turns out that they are. But well, I think the intention is to just have both of these proposals alive until we can determine what might be the most likely thing to happen with either of them.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to see this some of these programs go through. So I'd like to try to help you, Representative, with the bill, because when you asked the question, Mr. Chairman, earlier about lines on Bill House File 1259, the lines 118 and 119, the 15 years for thermal projects and 20-year payback for photovoltaic. You know, I certainly think that's in a realm of with some additional funding. I'm not certain that today we could do that with a standalone project, Mr. Chairman. We put $5 million in. So I don't know if the schools are putting. This is where I'm confused. To make these numbers work, and Representative Saylor, again, I'm trying to help you and your testifiers here make some sense of this as we move forward here with this, because I would like to see this happen to help us all.
Well, Representative Magnus, I didn't note exactly when you came in, so I don't know what you need to be filled in on here, but I did ask earlier what the typical cost of a school installation would be, and I think Mr. Carr's response was approximately $160,000. So Representative Saylor's testimony was that you would hope that these grants would cover the cost of installation for 20 or 30 schools across the state. That answers your question.
Well, my question is more on the payback, Mr. Chairman, and how those numbers sort out. Because as I was listening to the questions here in the committee, I would be satisfied with a 15-year payback on thermal and 20-year on photovoltaic. But to reach those, is my understanding, we would need some additional help. That's the point I'm trying to get through, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Let me remind you that Representative Saylor does have an informational hearing on both of these bills in the K-12 Finance Committee, which is meeting at the same time that we are meeting. So I think if we could manage to get her out of here and to that hearing, it would probably... she would probably be grateful. Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of quick points to the actually two bills. First, unfortunately, Section 1604 of the Federal Recovery and Reinvestment Act did hold provision of the Coburn Amendment. I think here's the case where sometimes the lip service and the reality are not well thought out. That swimming pools are explicitly not an allowed expense under by the federal stimulus dollars. Quite unfortunate, because I think solar thermal and hot water, solar hot water for schools is precisely what a sound investment would be. So unfortunately, that's the hard reality of decisions that get made in Washington that I think are not thought out, and I'd like to suggest that's a warning for us. Second, to the point of skin in the game, I noted Representative Beard that at 3:33 on Wednesday, March 11th, you and I agreed. because the skin in the game for the locals, I think, is a critical piece here. And Representative Saylor, I think we should investigate with staff the ability to use the existing tax-exempt lease purchase mechanism that is now law that we enacted last year, as a means for the energy savings during the payback period to pay for the upfront investment, and to see if that's a way that we can do the local match so there's skin in the game funded by private financing and then backed by an escrow fund that we have at the state. So I'd like to continue to talk about how we can do that, but I think it's both bills are the idea is good. I think the solar thermals are really important. Part of the solution is part of the Green Jobs Task Force formal recommendations, and I look forward, Representative Saylor, to helping you get these enacted this year.
Seeing no further discussion to the bill, Representative Saylor renews her motion on House File 1259 that it be recommended to pass and return to the Committee on Finance with a recommended re-referral to the Capital Investment Finance Division. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
Aye.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed, and Representative Saylor, would you like to make a motion on House File 1260, which members should note is virtually identical to House File 1259, except for the funding series.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Yes, I would like to move House File 260 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And you've already heard the testimony on this bill. So, again, it's just different funding sources.
Any discussion to that motion, Representative Hackford?
Chairman, why is the motion different?
The motion would be different because
the other bill.
The other bill is a bonding proposal. It has to go to capital investments. The House File 1260 deals with federal stimulus funds and would be under our purview.
Okay.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, the motion is before us. All those in favor, Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, no discussion on this. Just a quick question then, Representative Saylor. Have you thought any more, or is it, how would this, these types of proposals interact with SIP and the goals that our utilities are working to achieve? If a school takes off their swimming pool from electric, especially, or natural gas heating source, if they got involved in some of these projects, is there a way that they could count that towards their SIP goals? Have you thought anything about that? And if not, I'd encourage you maybe to add that in as a component of allowing these renewable energy type projects as a part of their SIP requirement.
Sounds Taylor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, I will work with anybody to make this work so that we can actually get this technology into our schools, and I will certainly take into account SIP provisions and any other thoughts that people have about how to fund this. I just want to make sure that we get this opportunity out to save money for our schools. Thank you.
With that, Representative Saylor renews her motion that House File 1260 be laid over. Any further discussion? Seeing none, the bill is laid over. Representative Saylor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Representative Knuth. House File 689. Members, let me say about House File 689 that there is an amendment to that bill which did not was not made available to the committee before our meeting. So it's my intention to have the discussion of the bill, and we can include a discussion of the Kalin amendment to that bill, but I don't intend to act on that until Monday because we did not have enough time to consider it before the meeting today. Representative Canoe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 689 is intended to...
Representative Canoe, first we need you to move your
you
bill.
You want me to move the bill? Okay. I move House File 689 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register.
Very well, and then please explain the bill.
The bill, well, there's the bill and there's the amendment. What the bill is trying to get at is making strategic tree and shrub planting part of our energy efficiency practice here in the state of Minnesota, because it does save energy and have a whole host of other benefits over time. And we've been having discussions about the best way to do that in our statute, and that's kind of the difference between the original bill as introduced, which would include strategic tree planting in our conservation to be eligible for a direct expenditure under our SIP program. But there's some concerns about the cost effectiveness measures of that, and so what the amendment does is put it as a requirement in the utilities design assistance program that strategic planting of trees and shrubs to maximize energy conservation for that project be included in that in the design assistance program. So the testifiers I have here today are experts in terms of trees and shrubs and how they can be part of an important part of an energy efficient design, and so I was hoping we could have them testify, and then I know we'll be laying this bill over to vote on Monday. but they're all here and ready to testify, so I was hoping we could have them testify today.
Certainly. Who do you want to have to go first?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Paul Morlock. I'm a shade tree grower from Hastings. I'm here representing the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association and the state's $2.1 billion green industry, which is made up of about 3,000 mostly small family-owned businesses. M&LA supports House File 689 because it has a common-sense, low-tech method of conserving energy with a set of tools available to utility customers. This policy change costs the state of Minnesota nothing, $0, but it will provide real, long-lasting, and growing results for property owners. The Department of Commerce's Conservation Improvement Program directs public utilities to invest their company's financial resources in conservation improvement strategies. The utility companies typically invest in such things as compact fluorescent lighting and Energy Star appliances to reach the state's program's mandate of reducing consumer energy costs. While investments such as lighting and appliance generally depreciate, the investment in trees actually appreciates over time. Trees appreciate in energy-saving value as the trees grow and provide more shade in the case of deciduous trees and more wind protection in the case of evergreen windbreaks. In the Minnesota Department of Commerce's Energy Information Center, there is an excellent collection of energy tips, including one called Landscape Property for Energy Savings. In fact, we have a copy of that here. And a page from the department's website says that in great big letters, trees save energy. Suggestions in landscape include shade west and east windows, create windbreaks by reducing wind-caused air infiltration. A windbreak can reduce annual fuel bills by up to 20%. Increase tree canopy. Strategically placed shade trees can reduce air conditioning costs up to 25%. Quantifying the energy benefits created by planting trees and projecting them forward is scientifically verifiable. Steve Downer from the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association and Mark Stennis, a certified arborist with S&S Tree Care, is here to speak on these issues. In conclusion, I'd like to emphasize that trees may not be a fast and flashy environmental solution, but they are a time-tested and truly workable part of the answer.
Thank you. Whoever would like to go next, please do.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Steve Downer. I'm with the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association, and I'd just like to say that the MMUA, the state's municipal utilities, support the strategic tree planting as part of an overall conservation improvement program, and also point out that the Sacramento Municipal Utility District has developed a calculator that calculates savings from trees, and I can get you more information on that if you need it. I think some of you probably looked at that last year, so these things can be calculated, and we support the bill. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Stennis?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us. I appreciate your investment and time here. My name is Mark Stennis, and I'm a plant pathologist by graduate training at the University of Minnesota. I'm an ISA board certified master arborist as a matter of trade. I work as a shade tree pathologist and an arborist for S&S tree specialist. For what it's worth, I'm past president of the Minnesota Society of Arboriculture and the Minnesota Turf and Grounds Foundation. And this kind of testimony for me is easy. This is warm and fuzzy stuff that's very easy to promote and support this kind of initiative. There are real fixed measurements that you can hold up to the prudence of planting trees as part of energy conservation and good energy policy. Quantified environmental benefits alone, that's benefits minus the cost and energy savings and stormwater runoff reduction and reduced pollution, I can blow on that a little bit later, both in terms of how much CO2 trees take up and how much is saved as a consequence in energy creation. With those benefits, we're 3 to 5 times the total tree care cost for small, medium, and large trees, and it accrues over time. The net benefits, for example, for a residential yard tree opposite a west wall, over a 40-year period, is about $600 for a small tree, and this is on residential, $160 in public. And these can be measured, and I'll be very brief about how we do that, but over a 40-year period, there's $1,360 net benefit for medium-sized trees, and this is not, small doesn't mean young and medium, medium-aged and large. It means variations in stature. And $3,040 for a large tree over a 40-year period. And if you're going to be planting trees, E. Greg McPherson, I guess if you could hand out that, this is done, okay. This measuring stick is presented very clearly in this Midwest Community Tree Guide, and it's summarized very nicely in the executive summary. This document is 100 pages long, but this executive summary is really very well presented. And there's reason to believe that even over a 3-year period, we're at least at the break-even period, and by 5, demonstrably in the positive, and it just accumulates from there. And there's measuring sticks for that, and it's presented really quite clearly here. To get right to the point, I guess, the warm, fuzzy part, for those who haven't thought about this, say on a hot summer day when you leave this building and head for the Capitol next door, there are 3 mature elm trees right out in front on the north side of this building, and then some younger honey locust trees. And if you can visualize for a moment what it would be like if those trees weren't there. And I'm sure it's easy to take it for granted, and a lot of people do, like the trees on the fairgrounds, to take it for granted until they were gone. But not only do they cool, and it doesn't take a theoretical mathematician to figure the cooling effect that you experience when you are in the shade and shelter of these trees. Because you have the shading effect, but something that people don't think about very much is the effect of the water that these trees transpire, which as a consequence doesn't run into the storm drain, but they sweat for us. And this can be measured in terms of, with existing technology, I mean, they know, for example, how on a day with a given amount of daylight, at a given temperature and given relative humidity, how many gallons of water a 25-inch diameter elm tree goes through. And you can, with various algorithms, figure out just how many kilocalories of energy are absorbed from the air in the environment just from the water that's transpired from those trees. So they cool us for a lot more reasons than just the shadow. And this just increases the return that we get from these trees over time. So these elm trees out here, for example, have long exceeded this $3,040 figure for value net benefit accrued since the time they were planted. And I would assert that the same is true for the younger trees out there as well. So I don't know the politics of these situations. I'm here to address basically the science and the math and what I consider to be prudent energy management, prudent energy policy. That's what I have to add. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for taking the time to hear us.
Thank you, Mr. Stennis. Are there questions at this time for Representative Knuth or any of her witnesses? Representative Welke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and any of the testifiers up there. I'm just wondering, you said that there's a calculator out there, and maybe Representative Knuth can answer this. If we move this forward, what type of a credit are we going to give the utilities for implementing something like this? Is this going to, do you envision this as a project-by-project type of a credit, or is there going to be a standard credit that the utility would receive for residential and for industrial? So I'm just wondering.
Representative Welty. We've been kind of working on this bill and going back and forth, and Representative Kalin actually helped us come up with an idea that would, if you look at the lead all amendment, it's that the utility design assistance program would have to include strategic planting in trees and shrubs to maximize energy conservation for the design project. And so it's not quite the same as just saying it's an approved fixed expenditure, but it would be calculated within that framework of the energy savings over time. And so does that answer your question? Kind of. It would be, Representative Kalin, if you would be willing to help explain this to, that might be helpful.
Representative Kalin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Knuth, Representative Welty. The challenge with the bill as written, allowing a direct expenditure, is that the cost effectiveness test probably won't ever be met by specific tree planting, because the trees, unless you're either the less expensive tree won't provide the appropriate shading and benefits to achieve energy conservation, or a larger, more mature tree would be too expensive in terms of the energy savings within the calculated period, which is usually either 1 year or 3 years. And so the challenge under the bill as written is that I don't believe that we'll ever get a tree planted and paid for as a direct SIP expenditure, as opposed to the delete all amendment requires that a strategic tree planting be part of the overall design, so as the trees appreciate in value and grow in height and breadth, that they then achieve the savings, so that the design assistance program, the trees that actually get paid for by the client, by the project owner, but the benefits would be calculated at the time of the design of the energy modeling, which is part of the existing design assistance program requirement. And I believe that the last sentence on the handout refers to a city, Lindenville, that has integrated the data from the handout, which I think is a really nice example of what the benefits accrue over the life of those trees, but that they made a similar effort where they actually require tree shade plans that show how developers will achieve the benefits over the long term. And I think that's what the amendment would end up doing. I share the goals of the group. I think tree planting and vegetative shading is a critical piece of energy conservation strategies. It just doesn't fit within the little square peg round hole challenge in terms of allowing for a direct expenditure where the energy savings can be calculated up front.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, Representative Knuth. So you're saying that there's this part of the delete all amendment on page 3 where it says the utility design assistance program must include the strategic planting, and that planting and those trees and shrubs that are planted are going to be paid up front by the client. Can you give us an idea what a typical home would cost for this design and planting of these trees and shrubs?
Representative Kalin?
I think I'm sorry, Mr. Downer, is that right? Or Mr. Stennis might be able to address that.
Well, I could say, excuse me, Mr. Stennis. Mr. Chairman, Representative, I appreciate. Let's see, the specific question is how much the cost, and the answer is that depends, you know, because there's so much variability about where you start, what you have for resources, what your objectives are, because you can get very nice landscapes installed for comparatively small amount of money if you start small, and I would argue, this is all together on the side, that you get more for your money when you start small, because you don't lose so much, and it's established quicker, and there's all kinds of advantages in that. But the answer is that it depends. You know, it's hard to say.
I could spend an awful lot of money. If you got a lot of money to spend, I could spend it for you.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. Mr. Sinis, so you're saying that it could cost the homeowner, it will take, how long before the homeowner will reap the benefits?
Mr. Sinis.
You don't know that either?
Representative. Well, I would say that according to Mr. McPherson, or Dr. McPherson here, is that by 3 years, in most cases, average cases, if you take, say, a 2-inch ball and burlap tree, you're at break even by 3 years and are in the positive by 5 years, and it just accrues from there. And that includes all the factors, including the cost of buying the plant, the cost of planting the plant, and the cost of the percentage of plants that you plant to fail. I mean, he's got his bases covered pretty good in this. And most of this research was done, by the way, as it relates to the Midwest. In metropolitan Minnesota, mostly with the cooperation of the Minneapolis Park Board.
Representative Anderson, I think to be clear, this is when you're designing it, you go through a process with your builder and with your designer, and you're understanding the benefits of planting trees and shrubs, and who pays for that or how they decide to use that, I think, is weighed with those cost benefits as the project moves forward. So what we're requiring basically is that trees and shrubs as an energy efficiency tool be part of that conversation. And so we're not saying you have to buy the most expensive trees to do this or shrubs or at what level, but we're saying it has to be part of the conversation as they move forward in designing the most energy efficient buildings and landscape included in that.
Well, Representative Knuth doesn't say you have to do it at all. It's just a design consideration.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Knuth.
Representative Anderson.
If a utility or an individual is having their house built on the utility services that area, in order for that homeowner to get their service, they have to go with this plan. They have to take this design, and they have to pay for it up front because that utility is going to service their house.
Representative Anderson, I don't think that's not a part of anything that exists or is proposed.
But that's a must that you're asking the utility to do here.
I don't think you are understanding what's proposed, Representative Anderson. Perhaps Mr. Eliff could shed some light on that.
Let me make sure I understand. First, I think what Representative Anderson is saying is looking at the amendment, the Utilities Design Assistance Program must include strategic planting of trees and shrubs around homes or buildings to maximize energy conservation of the design project. And the question is this done with every home that utility services? And I see Representative Kalen shaking his head.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, a little bit of background, perhaps. Chair Hilty carried the bill that enacted this section of statute related to the Sustainable Building 2030 standards, and Xcel Energy, as part of their previous conservation improvement program, has had a nationally recognized design assistance program for commercial. Just checking to make sure I'm describing this right, for mostly commercial and institutional applications, so that for their ability to reduce long-term energy conservation, the design up front to pay for things like achieving LEED certification or other energy efficiency performance. In order to achieve the energy conservation goals, both of the SIP program and also of the Sustainable Building 2030 bill, that all utilities are now required under paragraph E, line 3.1, to develop and implement SIP programs explicitly designed to achieve those goals. These programs must include, and this is existing language, offerings of design assistance and modeling, et cetera, et cetera. The new paragraph would only suggest that within their service territory, one of the services that each utility provide as part of that design assistance program include the strategic planting of trees. Those are, I believe, optional, and participating in the design assistance program is optional for the clients. It has proven to be a very useful tool to pay for the incremental design costs that are, just takes a lot longer to do design and to do energy modeling. I strongly believe, having done a lot of the energy modeling myself, that the use of vegetation and specifically more mature trees down the road is a very successful, cost-effective strategy. It just doesn't happen within the existing timelines of our SIP calculator, so it's more appropriate to go this route than require the utilities to spend money on something that's not cost-effective. That ends my treatise on this 2030 bill. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kale and Representative Anderson. One thing that also should be pointed out about the 2030 bill is that it only applies to commercial and public buildings. It does not apply to individual residences.
Mr. Chair, that's not what the amendment says here, though, according to what I read, and maybe you can show me where differently.
Well, Representative Anderson, I'm not addressing the language of the amendment. I'm just telling you that the bill, that the 2030 bill only applies to commercial and public buildings. It does not apply to private residences.
It was to me. And Mr. Chair?
Representative Kalen.
To that point, Representative Anderson, I know that we don't have the amendment formally before us, and we're going to act on it on Monday. I'm certainly willing to speak with you about the appropriateness of the term home, as opposed to just the broader term buildings. I do think that the application, residential application, is a good one, and I think that we can continue to talk about how to do that. But that language was lifted directly from the 689 that's introduced. So, Representative Anderson, I'll. Happy to talk to you about just the
word home. That's exactly why we're not acting on this amendment today, because we didn't have it before us until right before the meeting started. So we have gone past our time, and since we are not going to act on the amendment or the bill at this time, the bill is laid over until Monday for further consideration, and we are adjourned.